paging Dr. Keeney. It's time for medical news with Dr. Jim Keeney. Where the hell is this guy? On the Bill Handel Show.
AFI AM 640 live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Just the day before Thanksgiving, and this morning we have some horrific news as to what happened yesterday. A manager at a Walmart walks into the break room and starts shooting indiscriminately at the employees, killing six. Four are hospitalized, and then he killed himself. We don't know the motive yet. We're being told that I think no one was targeted, as one of the survivors said. He just walked in and started spraying the room. So we're going to get a lot more information on that. And we just had, a Club Q 3 days ago, in which five people were killed at the gay club. And it's just, this is just crazy. It really is. Now we're going to do it now every 3 days, every 2 days. All right, let's move over to medical news with Dr. Jim Keeney. We haven't done this in a while. Dr. Keeney, co-director of the ER at Mission Hospital in Mission Viejo. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
Okay. I was going to start with Thanksgiving and how everybody's going to feel bloated and there's a different way of dealing with it. But what I'd rather do is go into something that really scares the hell out of people and tell them, based on Omicron and RVS and the flu, you're going to die. So with that, let's talk about how people are dying. Well, not necessarily. And what the White House is saying about the Omicron-specific boosters, and that's ahead of this winter COVID and flu wave, which we're already in, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's starting, you know, for sure. I wouldn't say we're in a full-blown, you know, pandemic yet, but of influenza or anything like that. But RSV for sure has hit pretty hard. Yeah, so the White House is really trying to push increased booster uptake, especially for seniors and some of the minority and rural communities where the uptake is super low. So, you know, right now I think we're at about 11%. It was the last number I saw of people getting the booster vaccine. So extremely low. And they're just making a push to try and get that out there and get people vaccinated before the holidays. I mean, the problem you're fighting here is that it's not like it. While it is a game changer in some ways, it's just not one of those massive wins where you take this shot and all of a sudden you're guaranteed you won't get COVID. It just doesn't work that way. But you know, the data that we have shows that it does definitely reduce your chances of getting COVID and even getting symptoms. And the further out you are from your last COVID shot, the more beneficial this is.
You know, I see it's the same question I always have with the anti-vax movement, which there was always an anti-vax movement out there. But those were the guys that were on the street corner with bullhorns for the most part. It's what the Internet has done, of course, and the change in the political view of this country in many ways is create this medicine. Modern medicine is horrible. Real doctors are a bunch of quacks. I mean, all of that. And when we talk about the number of, let's say, flu shots that are being given, number of pneumonia shots that are being given, are those way down or is that maintaining the same level as it has for years?
No, I think those are still maintaining. They're still probably below where we want them to be, but they're maintaining. Yeah, especially, you know, elderly people with pneumonia, they used to call pneumonia, you know, the widower's friend, right? Which is means that that's what's going to get you when you after your spouse has passed away and you're the only one left. So that is what elderly people often, it's a real common cause of death. Even if it doesn't cause the death directly, you get pneumonia and then the stress from it will cause a heart attack or a stroke or other things. So, there's no question that these vaccines improve quality of life and right. Benefit society in general. But of course, you're always going to get, I mean, let's face it, from the Omicron vaccine, there have been cases that are real of harm, but they're so small compared to the amount of harm that the virus itself causes that, you know, on balance, it's really worth it.
Reminds me of the anti-seatbelt people where someone was trapped in a seatbelt and died because a fire was in the car, and therefore that proves how dangerous seatbelts are. Some good news that I picked up, and I want you to confirm that this is true is that even though this is a particularly vicious flu season that we've heard, the flu shot itself actually is a good match this year. Is that true?
Yeah, it seems to be a good match to what's circulating right now. So we'll see. You know, it's, again, the flu season really hits its peak January, February, okay, in that range, and not really now. So, and even as late as March sometimes. So, yeah, right now it's looking good. But as we've learned with now, COVID changes dramatically, way, you know, faster than the flu does. But hopefully, you know, we've learned from COVID that things change and different strains appear.
Can you take 1 minute to explain the concept of it's a good match this year for the flu, the vaccine?
Sure. I mean, so they look at the Southern Hemisphere, and which is having their winter when we're having our summer. They see what's circulating there. And based on that, they start the process of making the flu vaccine because it takes some time. You don't just pop that thing out in a week. So once they've determined that, they look. Now we do surveillance and we see what's starting to circulate with us. And so far, it seems to be a pretty good match.
Well, why is it? When is it? What happens when it's not a match, when you have that information coming up from the Southern Hemisphere?
Well, so if it's not a match, then for whatever reason, the shift has occurred. Now you're stuck with, you know, a vaccine that's been developed that doesn't necessarily match perfectly. It still gives some protection, just like the COVID vaccine does, but not perfectly. So we still use the vaccine, and it still does offer protection.
Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. And inevitably, we say to ourselves, it's that time of year, much like it's that time of month, except this is that time of year, and I feel very bloated. I don't know if that was sexist. I have no idea if that was a sexist statement or not, but I don't care. All right, so there are actually ways to feel less bloated after a big holiday meal, and I have never figured out a way to feel less bloated other than just not eating.
Yeah, I mean, I plan on feeling bloated for Thanksgiving. That's part of the fun, right? So I'm going to eat, and that's how I know when to stop eating, is when I feel bloated. But yeah, there's a Healthline article that talks about 5 ways to reduce bloating, and we'll see if they work. You can give them a try. One is, you know, to know your triggers, obviously. You know, if it's some people have bloating due to dairy products, due to gluten, due to spicy foods, acidy foods, bubbly drinks, you know, any of those things. If you know that, just avoid it.
Yeah,
you know, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, but that's your cheat meal, you know, so we'll dismiss that one, okay? Number one,
right,
dismissed.
Right.
Okay, let's go to number two.
Number one, dismissed. Number two is, and I always do this, it says don't save your calories for the party. And basically, they're saying don't starve yourself until the party and then gorge. And that's kind of, again, part of the fun for me. So
yep.
I'm not going to eat breakfast or lunch.
Right.
And we go early on dinner. And then I just eat 5 days worth of food all in about a 1 hour sitting.
Right. So, okay. So we've just dismissed number two.
Number two, yeah. I'm not following it. But if you don't want to bloat, not a bad idea.
Okay. So number two is done.
The second one is knowing what you like to eat, or you know, or what works for you and what doesn't, and then making the appropriate food swaps, right? So if you're, you know, if you're allergic to dairy, maybe you could ask the host to use almond milk when they make mashed potatoes. You know, you can change to healthy things instead of cheese. Use hummus, those type of things. But I mean, let's face it, heavy cream, cheese, and all these things, and lots of salt. That's what I'm about for Thanksgiving. And that's why, by the way, we get a lot of congestive heart failure people. I should just stop joking for a second and say that if you have congestive heart failure and you have all that gravy with all that salt, you're going to be seeing me in the ER. Happens every single year. And because salt helps you retain water, you're used to a normal diet, and all of a sudden you go off it just for one day, and your lungs will fill with fluid, and you will basically drown and show up in the emergency room. So don't do that.
Oh, it sounds like fun. Oh, I know you're part of a group. That's most ERs are part of a medical group. And how do you guys figure out who works Thanksgiving?
You know, lowest man on the totem pole. Just kidding. We basically take every holiday and we put it up on a board, and everyone takes a couple shifts during a couple of the holidays.
Oh, so are you working Thanksgiving?
I am not this year. I worked it last year, so now I'm working, I think it's either Christmas Eve or Christmas this year.
Okay, so we've dismissed 3 out of the 5, and let's just quickly dismiss the other two, and everybody's going to eat like a pig. Okay, what are the other two?
Four, Or is like what your mom told you, add green leafy vegetables. And that's because vegetables like, you know, spinach, kale, asparagus, chard, you know, they tend to have, an effect to kind of slow down the digestion a bit and to reduce bloating. Mm. I mean, if you're not used to eating vegetables, if you've never eaten anything green in your life and you add all of that, then that alone could cause some bloating. So
oh,
you do want to, you know, you should be eating those type of things already and work your way up.
Yeah. Well, I've never seen anything green actually at a Thanksgiving meal, and I probably won't again. Last one.
Okay. Last one is, I know for you, probably you're not a big alcohol drinker. So
I don't drink
alcohol
at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Will reduce your, will reduce kind of the bloating in your gut as well. And also the dehydration that results from it makes you just feel lousy, especially when you add it to all that salt that people are eating during the holiday season. So, think about a mocktail instead of a cocktail, or just maybe overall reducing your alcohol content, alcohol drinking. But let's face it, that's another one that people are probably going to disregard. And on the list of the five, probably the first one people will disregard.
Yeah, and since I don't drink, I don't care about that one. All right, moving into, something that's kind of scientifically neat, and this is right up my alley, and that is embryos that were frozen 30 years ago have been defrosted, obviously, and successfully implanted. And so these children, I have to tell you, and this is one what I used to, I actually taught law school for 5 years. I know it's hard to believe, but it was a seminar in third-party reproductive law. And it was an example, and this was early when IVF just started, is you create embryos, and you have fresh embryos that create a child, let's say a girl child, and you have frozen embryos that are defrosted 30 years later. And now you have the sister carry the embryos, which is technically 100% feasible. You can do it tomorrow afternoon. So sister carrying her sisters, is she the mom? Is she the sister? Is she both? That was on a final exam that I gave.
Right. It was just, you love to tweak people. That's
Yeah, absolutely. And it all depended on where the law was at one time. But let's talk about the technology, because people ask me all the time, how long can embryos stay frozen? And I answer indefinitely when you're bringing them to, 270 degrees below zero when you're talking virtual suspended animation. So let's talk about, the science here and where it's gone.
Yeah, I mean, so, they basically harvest egg and sperm and create an embryo in vitro. Then they freeze them, and they can last, as you said, indefinitely. Now, the question is the success rate. And you may know better than I do, but, the success rate drops over time as far as the embryo's ability to implant and grow to full maturation and deliver a baby. So these are definitely some of the world records. I mean, I think this is the world record.
Oh, yeah, this is the world record. We don't know. By the way, we don't know past 2 or 3 years or 5 years, because no one has done it.
No, there's been other ones. There was ones that were 27 years.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
And 24 years. So there's been a couple that are close, but this is definitely the longest.
Yeah, my kids. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
As they do this process and learn over time, obviously they're getting better at it. But what we've seen here, at least, is that, 30 years really is within the realm of possibility. I mean, now here's the question: is if you were an embryo 30 years ago and you have a 20-year-old implanted, and so then you're born 9 months later, so you're really, are you 32 years old at that point? You're older than your parents?
Yeah, it depends if the oldest kid is getting most of the inheritance. That's when we're going to find out when that lawsuit is filed. And, my kids were born in vitro fertilization, and it is hideously expensive. The good news, I always suggest people have twins, because the unit price drops in half. It's basically buy one, get one free. Jim? You have a good Thanksgiving. Enjoy. All right?
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
All right. Take care. All right, Jim Keeney. Love talking to Jim. What is that? Called him up the other week. I had I had something going wrong with me, and I called him, and he said, call your doctor. I went, thank you. Thanks. I appreciate that. And We didn't have a chance to do good cholesterol, which we'll do next time with Jim. Researchers just found the direct link to heart disease risk with the good cholesterol. So we'll pick that up next time we talk to Jim.
It's the news.
And you don't even have to wear pants. You can do it in your underwear. Or notice those things in your ears, those little IUDs that people put in their ears where the producer tells you what to do. None of that happened. I'm sorry?
IFB.
I knew it was one of
those. A little different than an IUD.
Yeah, whatever. You know, it's close.
Handle on the news. Oh, late edition. Now, Bill Handel.
And good morning, Wednesday, November 23. Bill Handel, morning crew. This is KFI live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. And before we get in to late edition, we are in the middle of the 12th annual KFI Pastathon. Chef Bruno's charity, Katerina's Club, provides more than 25,000 meals every week to kids in need in Southern California. When we started with them, it was 200 meals. Can you imagine? And your generosity is what makes it happen. We are by far the biggest donator to help these kids. So once again, we ask you to come to the table. Here's how to help. You donate at pastathon.com. Shop at any Smart and Final store in California, Arizona, Nevada, and donate right there at checkout. And they've been our partner for several years. Thank you for that. Go to any Wendy's restaurant in Southern California and donate. They're our new partners, and we really appreciate that. 100% of your donation goes to Katerina's Club. Details, pastathon.com. Okay, let's do it, guys. Time for Handle on the News Late Edition. Brought to you by directbuyers.com, the hassle-free way to sell your home at a fair price in 10 days or fewer. Late edition, Jennifer, Wayne, me, lead story. And it's a story that we've been covering, and not just us, certainly all over the country, if not internationally, although I don't even know if internationally they cover shootings, mass shootings here in the United States. And this one is out of Virginia, a Walmart. A manager walks into a break room with Walmart employees, literally starts spraying the room instantly with bullets, 6 dead, 4 wounded, and then he turns the gun on himself. And so we are getting more information. Jennifer is all over it as news breaks, and it's still fairly new. So we're getting different, we just get information at different stages. This is what the police call a fluid situation, which means it's just moving all over the place, bits and pieces, and some of it is good information, some of it has to be altered, some of it is just wrong. So it'll pan out, and Jennifer, you'll be covering it for us.
One thing I thought that was interesting during the news conference at 5 this morning out of Chesapeake was that they were asked, what was the weapon? It was a pistol. And so I was thinking, okay, how many bullets did he have in his pistol? Was he having to reload? Was he, you know, with a different weapon, you would have the capacity to have more?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, Wayne, you have some knowledge of weapons.
Well,
what can you put into a magazine in a single a handgun?
Yes, let's get our minds out of the California 10 rounds or less.
Yeah.
And just a standard, you go into a sporting goods store, whatever, you can walk out with a pistol with an 18, 19 round capacity extended magazine.
Yeah. So this would have been easy then if he killed, let's just say everybody had one shot. He killed 6 people and he injured 4. So that's 10.
He still could have had
that would have been easy
some rounds left over. Okay. And also handgun magazines. Easy to carry a second magazine if that is your intent as well. It wouldn't be, you know, if you're using a rifle, you need 2 hands on that rifle.
Right.
You go to reload, you've got to, at that point, you do have to compromise yourself.
Yeah.
But with a pistol, you really can drop one, slam another one in without missing a step.
And I'm
not trying to be facetious about it. I'm trying to answer your question about how with a pistol, could you have this kind of mayhem? And that's
I'm assuming those break rooms are not very large.
Probably not.
And the fellow at the Q nightclub who attacked or overran, if you will, the shooter, I think guys like that are few and far between who are prepared to jump on a shooter.
And an element of surprise, because I think at Q there were some people who realized what was going on. they knew what was going on while it was still going on. And I suspect here, you walk into a room full of people who are suspecting nothing, and it's a small room, there probably was no time for anybody in that room to really even understand what
was
happening.
True.
And they would have, if it was their manager, he would have been in that room with them.
Well, his appearance in the room would have caused zero concern.
Authorities are looking into the stabbing deaths of those four University of Idaho students while they were sleeping. And there has been some chatter about possibly one of the victims having a stalker, but police say they have had their detectives combing those, any tips, anything like that, and they have not found anything to support that so far.
Hmm. Case in point.
I turn right around and start investigating whoever told me that one of them had a stalker.
Right. Oh, good point.
If they're finding nothing,
why would
I go right back? I wouldn't go right back to them, but I would turn my attention to them. Why would they tell me that if there's apparently no evidence of it?
That's a very Lifetime movie. Very good.
Well, hope you like it windy with your turkey, because you're going to get high wind advisories. It's a high wind watch issued by the National Weather Service for Southern California. It's going to start tonight, go through tomorrow afternoon. Santa Monica Mountains, LA County Mountains, Santa Clarita Valley, San Fernando Valley's gusts could reach 65 miles an hour. That will blow the sweet potato casserole right out of your Aunt Helen's hands.
Yeah,
she's
however,
it into your house.
However, you can make Peking turkey. I don't know if you've ever had Peking duck. It's really crispy skin. It's cold air that's blown across the duck. And it's, and that's how, so Peking turkey, crispy, crispy skin, just hang it upside down outside your window, outside your front door. And it makes a nice holiday decoration, too, a dead turkey just hanging there. Okay. I think we'll take a break.
Please, can we take a break?
Yeah, let's do that right now. If that's okay with you.
There's also a fire watch.
Well, the Thanksgiving travel rush, you get your turkey, you get your stuffing, and we might get, some COVID restrictions again. So the Thanksgiving rush was back on this year, and you had people in numbers not seen for years traveling. They didn't care about inflation. A lot of people are like, I just got to get out and do something. Now, the busiest travel days were yesterday, today, and then, of course, Sunday. And what they're worried about, of course, is COVID-19 again this year. And are we going to see more restrictions, more of a rush of COVID restrictions after the travel holiday? That's what they're looking toward right now.
Hmm. All right, we'll see how many people. This story, this is sort of stunning. 54.5 million people traveling at least 50 miles. I mean, that's, how much is that? That's 8% of the population of the United States.
I'm getting on a flight.
Oh, no, more than that. 15% of the population of the United States.
I'm flying out of Ontario today to go to SAC to head to Reading. And there's no parking at Ontario. 2 days ago, I went to look for it. There's no parking,
even in the expensive
lots.
What do you plan on doing?
Ubering.
Okay.
So that'll
be cheap, too, on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, Uber,
it'll cost you more for the Uber to the airport than the flight itself.
It probably will, because it's $72 from my house to Ontario Airport. You know how you can book them in advance and you know. Yeah. And I think the flight up there might have been $79. Maybe.
Well, a big real estate developer here in LA filed a lawsuit against the city saying that their COVID-19 rental protection program constituted an unconstitutional taking of their property because they could not collect rent, they could not evict anybody, and they did this lawsuit, and federal judge Dean Pragerson, the judge I know better than any other federal judge in the country, who once played in high school in a band with Bruce Gary, who would become the drummer of The Knack.
I didn't know that.
What?
Yes, I know Dean Pragerson facts this morning for you.
You were, you worked with him for many years, yes. Dean Pragerson. Do you call him, Deany Baby?
Dino.
Not in the courthouse.
Dean Meister.
No. He's a good guy. He said, sorry, Charlie, that's not an unconstitutional taking. It's not a taking because it's temporary.
He's known as a pretty liberal judge, isn't he? Or not so much?
I feel that that is fair to say.
Okay.
And he also said that the program did a lot of common good, not only protecting people from, mass relocation as people were losing their jobs, but also helping to prevent the spread of COVID-19. And so there was a lot of public good, and it wasn't permanent. And so these real estate owners got nothing.
I know this next story is a good thing, but it kind of makes me sad that this isn't the way in which we operated in the first place. So the LA Fire Department has launched its first Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Bureau. It kicked off yesterday. And they say that it'll focus on a commitment to engaging the voices and respecting the humanity of its members, how it handles recruiting, hiring, workplace conduct, retention, and promotion.
Yeah,
now, I guess it just makes me sad that that wasn't status quo.
Yeah, now I'm not a big fan of political correctness and these programs, but I must tell you that the fire department probably has the longest and greatest record of straight out discrimination. It used to be it was the most nespototic. Nepotism went through the fire department like crazy. It'd be a nephew, sons of firemen, and that's the way you got in. And it was, I think it was the whitest department for the longest time in the city. And it desperately needs some diversity. Remember when they fought women becoming firefighters because women couldn't lug those huge ladders around, and there was a huge fight there, and they finally straightened that out. The courts simply said, okay, here's what you do for you women firefighters. You turn to the biggest guy and go, here, you carry the ladder. And that seemed to have worked out pretty well. I just made that up, by the way. So in any case, I think this is good stuff. It really does need it.
After being wrongfully in prison for 20 years, a man in Ohio has won $45 million in his lawsuit against the police department and a particularly bad, and I mean bad in an evil way, detective. His name is Scott Moore, Miami Township, Ohio, the police department, and this guy, they suppressed evidence. Now, what evidence did they suppress? Why is it a big deal? Oh, evidence that would have proven that this guy was in another state when the crime happened.
Wow.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty blatant. Yeah, let me ask you, the fact that this went to trial, don't you find that interesting? You would think this would have settled considering how egregious this case is. Because you know if this, or... the plaintiff here wanted such astronomical money that there was no way to settle. They had to roll the dice.
It may be that that a settlement simply could not be reached. The guy, he was convicted of, and these are terrible crimes, but he's not the guy who did them. He was convicted of a couple of rapes and a kidnapping. And not only did they hide that it was receipts that he had been camping in another state when these crimes happened, they also, this detective, screwed around with the eyewitnesses. He told the eyewitnesses, you might not recognize him in the courtroom because he's dyed his hair, which was not even true. And various other, there's a whole litany of things they did that probably are worth every penny of that $45 million.
You would think. Okay, let's, I think we can finish with this.
Oh, you want to finish with this one? Okay, so in Florida, remember the story of the 14-year-old who was 100-pound over the ride's weight and he fell from the Orlando Freefall Drop Tower ride in March? Well, now you've got leaders in Florida who are asking for new fines and changes after that death, and they've announced a $250,000 fine, in fact, in this case. And remember how they said, oh, we're going to tear down the ride? Well, you've got the state who says, you guys can't tear down the ride at Icon Park until we finish our investigation.
Yeah, now, when did this happen?
March.
Okay, and they haven't finished investigating this. And from what we understand, the kid was too big. They had to put some kind of an extension belt.
Yeah, they did like a manual
and
adjustment.
They couldn't physically put that device, that strap device, over him. I mean, why do they have to tear down the ride? How about this? You have a scale right there, and if someone is even close to maximum weight, you throw that person on the scale, and then you put him or her on the ride if it's underneath that, and then you strap down. I mean, that's such an easy fix. I mean, these are millions
of dollars. There was nothing wrong with the ride.
That's the point.
Your point, right? There was nothing wrong with the ride. This kid was almost 100 pounds
overweight,
over the weight limit for the ride.
Yep, and they still
put him in there.
Right. I mean, obviously the park is liable.
They should be fined for right. that their people
and no,
did that.
And no question,
the ride itself.
I know it's millions of dollars to tear down a ride and then bring another one up. All right, guys, we are completely done with the news. Coming up, Twitter, another story about Twitter and Musk. And who's bailing out? Well, if you advertise on Twitter, that would probably be you. I'll give you that story coming right up. KFI AM 640 Live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.